Hello, welcome to How to Make a Memory, the show that explores the items we make for one another and how they impact our relationships. My name is Jen Tierney, and this week we're going to be talking with my friend Savannah. Several years ago, Savannah and I had gone with a group of friends up on a skiing trip in Vermont. And while we were there one afternoon, there were a number of people who expressed some interest in learning how to knit. Being up in Vermont on a cold afternoon, they felt moved to take up the hobby. So as a knitting instructor, I sat down with them and spent a few hours going over some of the basics. And it really gave me a chance to get to know Savannah better. And we've been pretty close since then. So when she heard that I was doing this podcast, she really wanted to talk to me about how her life has been impacted by the inclusion of knitting as a hobby and as something that allows her to create things for the people that she loves. So we sat down and had a chat about that. I hope you enjoy listening to our conversation.
Thank you so much for agreeing to come and chat with me for a little bit.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So tell everyone a little bit about your wonderful self.
Oh, man. Well, my wonderful self was born into kind of a weird family situation. I was raised in the Navy with, it was just me and my mom, and we moved around every 3 years. So I had kind of a uprooting and pretty diverse upbringing, and ultimately ended up going to high school in New Jersey. So usually people can relate to that. I don't really like to say I'm from New Jersey because it doesn't seem accurate. I ended up in Boston for school, or the Boston area, I should say, and met my now husband and recently became a mother. So I have a almost 3-month-old upstairs. I think she might almost be asleep, but if you hear some baby noises, it's probably just her.
I am very, very, very glad that you have even given me any of your time, considering that you have such a tiny little baby. As a mom of two, I know how difficult it is to, like, find time to do anything other than, like, try to sleep, try to shower, and feed your baby constantly.
Constantly.
Oh, my word. They eat a whole lot for such tiny people.
I know.
So tell me a little bit about what it is that you make and why it's so important to you.
I like to consider myself a little bit of a beginner in the, instead of calling it making, I'll call it crafting, since that's like, it's a trendy word now, right?
Crafting. Sure, crafting.
Just a few years ago, actually, I met this lovely woman who was stuck with me in, what was it, Vermont? And
oh, I wouldn't call it stuck.
And I think a group of men, maybe it was a mixed crowd, I'm not sure, but some of us had gone out for drinks and others had stayed inside with the promise of learning how to knit from this lovely lady. And I was thrilled. I'd always wanted to learn how to knit. So I was really excited. And it's funny because at the time I was thinking like, oh, this is great, you know, mindless activity that I can do and just kind of make things, you know, like be more creative with my spare time. So I like to knit, but I am still, I think, a little bit of a beginner in the knitting world. But that doesn't mean that I haven't made some things and really enjoyed it.
Some very impressive things, I would say. I would not categorize you as a beginner, but I mean, You feel free to be modest if you'd like.
I just know that the world of knitting is so deep. One of the reasons why I prefaced it with being a beginner and wanting to learn how to knit because I thought it was, quote, mindless.
So I haven't talked about knitting yet on the podcast, but I've been knitting for 15 or 16 years. And for me, I also got into it because I was looking for a mindless activity, but I've found over time that it is the exact opposite. It's a very mindful activity. So, but what it's enabled me to do over time, and I'm sure you'll find this too, is I can sit and do something that is mindless, like consuming television or podcasts, something that really is very passive. while my brain is very engaged in knitting, and I have to be very mindful what I'm doing so that I don't drop stitches or make mistakes or whatever. But I've found that over time, my brain can now juggle those two things, which initially for most people is very impossible. For me, it was completely impossible until maybe 6 or 7 years ago. So, oh, I'm so glad you're talking about knitting. I love knitting.
I really like the fact that you use the word mindful, because it's like so, so accurate. It's like a puzzle and meditation and creation kind of all in one activity. It's so much more than I thought it would be. So when I signed up for it, I was like, yes, something, some little hobby, you know, and I learned how to do it. And by the way, difficult to persist like that, you know, like you get taught once and you really have to, at least I found, I really had to keep going back to it and force myself to get comfortable with it. But once I did, once I started trying new techniques and challenging myself, it just became really,
Oh, poor baby. That's okay. She's just letting us all know that she's here. She says, I want to be on the podcast too, mommy. I can make sounds.
Oh, but anyway, as I was saying, the knitting has just become a really enriching thing. And I think making things for other people and also for myself, you know, has been something that I've never really been able to do before outside of the random, you know, scrapbook, not to belittle scrapbooking. I know some people are very, very good at that. But, you know, outside of the kind of typical project or like things I did in elementary school for my mom, like create a little necklace. It's been really, really great to kind of explore my own abilities. And, you know, depending on who I'm making it for, the amount of detail or the amount of not detail that goes into the project.
Sure. I'm familiar with that specific thought process. How much effort do I want to put into this?
Yeah. Who is it for? Is it worth ripping out, you know, 12 rows that I can go back and fix that like one knit stitch that's a purl?
And the level of difficulty of the pattern you pick sometimes, you know, like there have been people in my life who I really want to make something special for, but I know that they're not going to appreciate like really detailed and like 80 hours worth of work is not going to, it's going to be lost on them. So pick a pattern that's going to take me 10 hours, you know, and like that's still a big commitment. That's still a really huge gift for someone, I think. If somebody spent 10 hours making something for me, I'd be like, what, 10 hours of your life? So I still feel like it's meaningful, but I haven't created something that they won't necessarily appreciate the way somebody else would. And I can spend that time making something for someone who maybe is a knitter or does do crafting and will kind of accept it with that level of enthusiasm. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's so true. Mm-hmm.
So tell me a little bit about some of the things that you've made.
Yeah. Well, if I think about a recent project that I deliberately chose because of its simplicity, because the person that I was making it for would not appreciate it yet, is I made a baby blanket for my child. And also, I think part of the reason why I chose a simple pattern was because I very wisely knew that I would be pregnant and making this blanket.
Yes. It's good to think ahead.
Yeah. Oh, there's so many nights where I was like, I really should finish this. And I know it's like a really good goal to have. And I'm so glad I did it. It really is good to have something to make and create and watch grow as you are growing a child. But man, when I made a mistake, I was not going back to fix it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's something about being pregnant that makes knitting sort of like, oh, hell no. I'm not going to fix that. Whatever. I'm doing something really hard right now.
Yeah.
I'm not going back for like, that.
It's still enjoyable, but it's really only the like muscle memory part that is kind of fun. At least for me anyway, when I was pregnant, I did not go back and fix any mistakes. But I guess, you know, there are other projects where I've sort of, to your point, wanted to give something to somebody who would appreciate it. I think the example that I'm thinking of is more, I really wanted to impress the person that I was making it for. Then I've painstakingly gone back and tried to fix things. But the best part about knitting is feeling like you will never figure it out and then figuring it out. For people who don't knit, I feel like it's just, I mean, it's just two needles and yarn. Like, what's the big deal? But no, no, this is fixing a problem is really rewarding and very challenging, at least for me still.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, I still come across things that, because, I mean, I teach knitting now. And I mean, I have students that come in that I take a look at something they've made and I'm like, I have no idea how to advise you on this because I have no idea what you did. Please hand it to me. And I'm very fortunate in that my brain, because of how much I have knit over the years, my brain can look at the knitting and just kind of see the tangle and understand how to undo it. But if I had to explain it to another human being in a way that they could replicate, sometimes knitting problems are so unique that there's no way that I could be like, let me explain this problem to you so you could like fix this again when it happens in the future. Because it probably will never happen that way ever again.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's like a network or maybe a language. I don't know what a better comparison is, but it's just, it's really complex looking at all the different stitches and how they interact with one another and how the pattern is supposed to look. And it's tough, but that's why I like it so much. So I've really appreciated learning it.
Tell me more about this lovely blanket. And you'll have to send me a picture too so I can include it in the, you know, the show notes.
I think the reason, have I showed you a picture yet of it?
No, I haven't seen it.
It's probably because there's so many mistakes.
That's okay. Take a picture of a spot that doesn't have any mistakes and it'll just be a close-up of the blanket. It's fine. No big deal.
Okay. So this blanket, you know, I kind of, you might have been able to pick up on this already because of the way that I've been talking about it, but you know, I'm pregnant and I'm knitting. And at this point, I think I was like 37 weeks almost finished with it, almost finished growing this baby. And like, really just, it doesn't really matter, but I needed to finish this blanket before the baby was born. Like, you just kind of have to, right? So I'm kind of rushing through it and, you know, I have the baby and it's amazing and it's great. But I had her in May. So, you know, kind of spring and summer around the corner. And also I didn't really have much use for this blanket that I had like saved over. I took some newborn pictures of her. I also like to kind of dabble in photography, and I took some fun newborn pictures of her with her on this blanket, you know. But otherwise, I had not gotten any use out of it. And I know it's only been almost 3 months, but that's obviously an eternity to me. You know, I'm a little disappointed that I haven't been able to really introduce this blanket to my daughter, even though I know she's not really capable of appreciating it right now. But I recently, you know, kind of haphazardly slung it over our rocking chair. So I have a rocking chair in the nursery. That's where I feed her most of the time. And I didn't think about it when I was doing it. I just needed a place to put it that wasn't over the crib because you're not supposed to put anything over the crib or in the crib. And I started feeding her one night and noticed that she was captivated by something behind me. So my daughter's kind of getting to the age where she needs to really look at things all the time and be stimulated constantly. And I just realized it's because I've got this like pattern behind me of the blanket. And so that was kind of just a really fun, really small, but like really lovely moment of like introducing the blanket to her and not even really intending to. And now she has something to kind of stare at while I'm feeding her or trying to burp her or whatever else I might be doing in that rocking chair for her. And then the other night I also had it got a little bit chilly finally here. I live in Colorado and it's August now, but it was late July when this happened. And I realized that I was cold and she was cold, and getting up to kind of close the window or whatever was not convenient for me. And I realized suddenly with such excitement that I could pull the blanket from behind me and wrap it around us both, and got to experience this like silly little but really precious snuggle moment with my daughter and this blanket that I had made her. And it was very touching, you know, 3 o'clock in the morning.
Yes, the best time for touching moments to happen when you're a new mom. Really, it's the true. Only time. Oh my goodness.
But yeah, so it's like this thing that I made for her that kind of has been giving back to me a little bit in the last couple of weeks.
Is there something that you feel you really want to teach your daughter, your children, other people to make?
It's so funny that you asked me that, because I was on the, I almost asked you whether or not you wanted to teach Emma how to knit. And then I remembered that I was not the person supposed to be asking questions.
I mean, you're totally allowed to. That's fine. I do not mind. This is a conversation, less an interview.
That's true. Okay. I thought about that recently, whether or not she would want to learn how to knit, and, you know, kind of imagining myself as like a master knitter at that point in my life, because it had been, you know, however many years. But yeah, I would love to not just, you know, not just think about teaching her knitting, but also explore different ways of making things. You know, like, I'd love to get the chance to understand weaving, and maybe I'll like dabble in crocheting. And yeah, no, it's an interesting question. I think so much is left up to the, and you've probably felt this many times too, but just, I have no idea what my child will be interested in. And to even think about expecting her to want to do something that I like to do is just, you know, kind of totally outside of my, I can't even think about it, because I just, one day at a time.
Yeah, I've found so far, and my daughter's almost three, so still quite little. I've found that she really is still at that age where she just wants to do whatever we're doing. So right now she's super into cooking, because we cook every night and she watches us cook. And so she's got this little stool in the kitchen, and we set her up with a little pan with her own little ingredients. And she is at a burner that is not on, and she cooks right next to us while we cook for real. and she, it gives her, like, you know, a real sense of ownership over the food that we're eating, which is nice. And this is just something she's sort of picked up on her own. So I think that when they're little, at least from my experience, they just want to do what you're doing. So if she sees you knitting, she's probably going to want to try. When she's like a little bit older, when she's like three or four, like Emma, when she sees me knitting, she wants to sit with me and hold the yarn and hold the ball and unwind the ball while I'm knitting to like help me get more yarn. You know, she's very like, what can I do to be involved in this?
Yeah. You know, I can imagine, if I think about how I was as a kid, I can imagine learning how to knit, and then it's too hard, and so forgetting, and then going back and learning again and trying again, and ultimately finally getting to the point where I'm mature enough persist at the activity long enough to really learn it and get to know it and enjoy it, and also feel ownership over it, which I think is kind of more of a mature feeling anyway. But yeah, I mean, I think, you know, whether or not it's knitting, I think I do really want my daughter to feel like she can create things. I think it's a really important skill, and whatever it is, you know, I used to draw when I was a kid. I don't really do that anymore, but that was my like kid creation thing, you know, that I considered myself very good at art when I was nine. That was like my talent, you know, and then I started gymnastics and it took over my life.
I've known you for several years, and I, whenever you say to me like, oh yeah, I'm going to the gym to do gymnastics, I think to myself, what does that mean? What is she doing? Is she doing like tumbling? Is she doing like back handsprings? Is she on a horse? Like, what is she? What, like, what is she doing? I cannot picture you doing gymnastics. It's fascinating to me, because I know it's something that you care a lot about, and I know it's something that you're good at, and that it has made you like really fit and powerful as like as a small person like me. Like, we're both like petite women, and you are so much stronger and more powerful than I am. So I know that whatever this is really good for you, but I have no concept of like what it is that you do when you go there.
Well, all of these things unfortunately need to be put in the past tense, because I just spent the last year making a baby. But yeah, I mean, would you like me to talk to you about what goes on in a gymnastics gym?
I would love to know what goes on.
So my experience recently, the one that you're thinking of as an adult, as a working woman, you know, going to the gym to do gymnastics, I guess that does really sound strange, because usually you go to a gymnastics website and it's like a bunch of 6 and 7 year olds with leotards and sparkles in their hair, and they're all lined up, you know, like very, it's a very sparkly sport, I guess you could say, which is really surprising considering how like
how athletic it is.
Very powerful sport. Yeah. I coached for a while, and I think, you know, anytime I moved to a new neighborhood, I would try to find the local gymnastics scene. I coached at a gym in Cambridge, Massachusetts, and somebody had told me in passing about this other gym where adults worked out, and I was like, wow, that's really, that would be really cool. And one thing led to another, and I learned about where it was and what it was, and it turns out it's this group of adults who, you know, actually there's classes if you want to take classes, and then there's, you know, people who've been doing gymnastics for a while kind of just use the gym as an open gym and work on their skills. But there's a group of them that are part of what they call a rec team, and they compete with other college rec groups. A lot of universities and colleges have like clubs, gymnastics clubs, and what we would do is we just formed our own club, and we would compete against college-aged.
That's fantastic. I'm sure you were still impressive.
Oh, I would say really mixed. We had maybe four really talented gymnasts in our group. That does not include me. I'm not being modest, really. We had four individuals that I can think of off the top of my head who were just really, really good. We relied on their scores. And then there were the rest of us who we would have kind of an occasional shining moment out of every five. You know, to give you some background, to be an all-around gymnast means that you're competing on all of the events, which is floor, that's tumbling, you mentioned before, uneven bars, vault, and beam. And so it was rare for one of us to even be an all-around gymnast. Most of us had just given up on at least one event. I didn't touch the beam or the vault. So when I went to the gym, I only focused on the floor, which is tumbling, and the uneven bars, which I've just always found enjoyable. But yeah, it was definitely kind of a, you know, mixed bag. We'd have, so the first person who goes up is always the worst, for lack of a better way of describing it. So let's say you're in the middle of a meet, and your team is going up to compete on an event. Let's say we're doing uneven bars. The first person who would step up to the bars would be the worst, and then the last person would be the best. But it was quite a spectrum. But the point was that we were having fun. I mean, we didn't come in last. We certainly, you know, we'd go to nationals every year, which is like a national club competition.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, it was super fun. And we didn't lose. You know, we made it into finals, so it was, but most of it was due to the
four really good people.
And the four really good gymnasts. Yeah.
I mean, listen, if you are all, like, grown women in their, like, late 20s, early 30s, competing against college-age girls, well, they're still women, but, like, young women in their peak of fitness, then, like, good for you if you made it to the finals. That's incredible.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think part of it is also that a lot of the women that were in college were not in their peak of fitness, right? So like peak for gymnast is 14.
Oh, really?
Through 18.
Huh. That's really interesting. I mean, that definitely makes sense because when you're younger, you have less body weight. And so you can sort of throw yourself around a little bit easier. But I also assume that as you get older, you just get, like, your body gets more powerful. You get to be stronger. But I guess that's probably not true. Like, in relation to your body size, it's probably the smaller you are, the better.
A lot of it is your strength to weight ratio, right? And also, I think the level of fearlessness.
Yeah.
In kids, it's funny, but it's so true. They will just throw things and they'll get injured and they'll heal quickly. That's, you know, that's kind of part of it too. I mean, so much of gymnastics is also physics, right? Like how you angle your body as you're approaching a skill and where you distribute your weight. I mean, it's pretty intense. But yeah, no, I mean, the adult gymnastics experience is a really fantastic one because the group that I not even competed with, but hung out with. So the type of people that would come to MIT gym to learn how to do gymnastics as adults. So they would have these adult beginner classes going on while we were doing open gyms, we'd be using the other stuff, you know, or the floor or whatever, while another group of adults were learning how to do gymnastics. And it just made for like the most amazingly diverse group of personalities. A lot of people were coming from MIT. It's just, you know, amazing to watch people try to learn how to do this very difficult sport as adults. And we get some like 30 somethings.
Wow.
And a couple even older, but not too often.
Yeah, I can't imagine trying to,
I mean, it's a little bit of an unfair advantage though, because most of the women and men, I should say, in the gym that I would work out in that were gymnasts have been doing it for such a long time, that it just, you know, there was no period of time where they needed to build up that strength. Again, you just go into the gym, you throw some things, you feel awful the next day. But you can still do everything from muscle memory in general.
We've brought it up a few times talking about knitting and talking about gymnastics, and it is amazing how muscle memory works.
Yeah.
And how if you've done something many times, it's like your body just knows how to do it. I mean, I played flute when I was in 4th through 8th grade. And I picked it up a few weeks ago because I found it, you know, as I was cleaning stuff up. And I was like, I wonder if I remember how to do this. And I could still do a scale.
You go, girl.
It was crazy. I haven't picked it up in nearly 20 years.
Yeah.
But I could still do a scale. That's probably all I can do. That's just incredible that my fingers knew where to go. Like, my brain didn't. I mean, I'm sure my brain was engaged. People who do neuroscience are like, of course your brain was engaged. But there wasn't a part of me that said, I need to now do this with my fingers consciously. It was like this completely subconscious, my fingers are just doing this now. It was really, I was astounded. And I think that, like, with knitting, that's something that comes along, that idea of what we think is mindless, where you're brain just kind of does it on autopilot, but allows you to get into that place of like that place of flow, that place of meditation where you can just kind of like,
yeah,
do it.
It's a totally different part of your brain.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like I just it's so difficult to engage without the assistance of something like knitting for me. You know, like I've tried, I think actually we've talked about this before, I've tried deliberate meditating. And every now and then I'll kind of go back to it, but it's not as easy for my brain to kind of fall into that place without the assistance of something like knitting.
I really enjoyed talking to Savannah about her knitting life. I think that she did a great job of capturing what knitting offers people who participate in it as an activity. Not to mention all of the really, really cool things I learned about the world of adult gymnastics. I was not expecting that, but it was a really great addition to our conversation, I think. I'd like to tell you a little bit about something I made this week. I traveled down to Martha's Vineyard for a bridal shower and wanted to bring something special and useful for the bride-to-be. I found some beautiful and hardy recycled denim yarn at my local craft shop and knit up 3 washcloths. The pattern, while simple, creates a piece that is eye-catching and appealing. They should be resilient enough to withstand dishwashing, but are delicate enough to be displayed. I love this pattern and will definitely go back to it for future gifts. You can find a link to the pattern in the show notes. That brings us to the end of this week's episode. A special thanks to Savannah for making some time to speak with me in the midst of new motherhood. Our music is by Chuck Salamone. Our logo design is by Becky Carpenter. We get system admin support from Greg Thole. Join us next time for a taste of some remarkably special banana bread. Now, go make something for someone you love.